Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. It's my pleasure this week. We are going to have John Solomon on both Tuesday and Friday. He is an investigative reporter. He was one of the best and most important investigative reporters throughout the entire Russian hoax. He's a Fox News contributor, but also, I think more importantly, he's actually developed his own news site. So he has a long history in the news, and we're going to get into that and his new book called Fallout, which we'll discuss on Friday. John, welcome to the show. Thank you for all the work you've done and being one of the few investigative journalists that we've had out there. Previously, we've had on Lee Smith. We've had on Julie Kelly with her new book a few weeks ago. And we had on Chuck Ross, who also is one of the great investigative journalists. So it's an honor to have you on the podcast this week. And so welcome.
It's a great to be with you, Congressman. And thanks for all you did to help us get to the truth. I mean, when we started back in the spring of 17, there weren't a lot of facts out there. But because of your determination and other members of Congress, we were able to finally tell the American people what really happened in the Russia collusion hoax.
Well, John, one of the reasons we had that challenge is because the media in this country is dead. You've appeared on Sean Hannity's show multiple times just last week. You and I appeared together on Sean Hannity's show. I think we must have at least a dozen or two dozen times you and I were on the same panel talking about the Russia hoax. One of the challenges we had through all of this, this Russia hoax episode and, really scandal is what I would call it, throughout the last 4 years, is that what we found out doing the investigating is that the reporters themselves were involved in this. So you had former reporters that set up a kind of a oppo research firm, Fusion GPS. They were working for the Democratic National Committee, and they were working for the Clinton campaign. Former journalists, they brought in a whole bunch of other people, and they dirty people up. The worst problem is that they go and feed this opposition research. That's essentially stories that are made up out of whole cloth. They're very sensational because they're not true, like we found out with the Russia hoax. The media was in on this, John. High-level reporters across nearly the entire structure. There was probably, I guess, at least 20 to 100 reporters that knew about this across the country back in 2016, the beginning of 2016, when Fusion GPS began shopping their so-called dossiers, you know, and they love to use that term dossier. it was a lonely world out there. I know for you and Sarah Carter, when you have all the people that you've known for years, you work with for years, they're on the take, John. They're on the take. They're taking these dossiers. So take us back to kind of 2017 when you first start to sense that something's wrong with this Russia hoax, and you begin to see that it's a hoax. What was that seminal moment that said, wow, my friends, the people that I've worked with for years have taken a very strange route, and you're going to go another direction, and you're going to get to the truth? I know it was a lonely path for you and others.
Yeah, it was. But there was one seminal moment. So I think in January of 2017, my bosses at Sinclair asked me, John, go check this Russia thing out and find out if it's real or not. And I had a round of interviews with very senior FBI and DOJ officials and a few people in the intelligence community and said, there's nothing here. There's a lot of smoke, but no fire. So I dropped off the case and really wasn't that interested in it. And then it was in March in 17, because I've covered the FISA court for years. There was a revelation, a declassified document made available by the FISA court that showed that at the end of the Obama administration, hundreds of FISA violations were belatedly disclosed to the court. They'd been withheld. They're supposed to be disclosed in real time. The Obama administration held on to them and then just showed up at the court one day and said, surprise, we've been having all these violations going back 3-4 years. And I dug into that story. I wrote that story. I went on Sean Hannity that night. I think it was around March or mid-March, if I remember correctly. And then I got home at night. It was about 11 o'clock at night. I pulled in my driveway and there was a blue sedan sitting out by my mailbox. It's parking lights on, U.S. government license plates. As I got out of the car, these two guys approached me, a very clean cut. They looked military or law enforcement. And he said, "Are you Mr. Solomon?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Listen, we want to talk to you about the story you did today." I'm thinking, "Oh God, am I in trouble now?" And they're like, "You're at the tip of a very large iceberg." And I said, "Well, what do you mean? What iceberg? I thought it was just a bunch of violations." And he said, "We can't tell you much because most of what we know is classified. But we can tell you that the U.S. Intelligence Committee, and particularly the FBI, has been used as in a political dirty trick. And if we don't stop it, America's at risk." And I'm stunned. I'm saying, "Well, what is it? I can't tell you much." And I talked to him for a few more minutes, and then I asked him, "Why me? Why now? Why are you doing this?" And I remember the guy on my right hand side looked right at me and said, "You rely on guys like us to stop the next terror attack, to stop the next counterintelligence threat in the United States. We use these very sensitive tools. If we lose them when FISA is renewed or whenever Congress revaluates this stuff, you won't be as safe as night, and I won't sleep as well as night. That's why we're coming to you, and good luck with it." And so I had this little tiny tidbit, political dirty trick in the intelligence community. And that's when I realized that maybe what my colleagues were reporting was wrong. And we just doubled down, went back, and started following every piece of the iceberg. And, at the time, we didn't know about Steele being connected to Clinton. We really knew very little. Today, we know most everything. And what we know is the U.S. media, the national media, was a complicitous co-conspirator in spreading a very, very false story.
Yeah, for sure. So, I'm assuming that doesn't happen every day. I've never been a journalist, but I'm assuming two guys never. In the dead of night coming up to you and saying, "Hey, we have issues." But I will say we've had some very important whistleblowers and informants that came to the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee that really helped us in early 2017. If it wouldn't have been for those, we would not have discovered the unmaskings that were occurring, which is kind of ironic, John. In that March 2017 timeframe is also the timeframe in which I made public that they had been unmasking Trump transition officials.
That's right.
And of course, it kind of kicked all that off. So let's fast forward. I mean, a lot of my folks that watch the podcast here and listen to the podcast, they know about the Russia hoax. We've talked about it a lot. But you were working then for Circa, and then you went over to the Hill. Why don't we just back up? How did you get into journalism originally, and then kind of take us up to right before, and then we'll get into your new site, Just the News?
That's a great question. So I was a young freshman in college at Marquette University in Milwaukee. I wanted to go into journalism. I come out of a family of all law enforcement. So my dad and my brother, Irish cops, and I was sort of the black sheep of the family going into journalism. But I was trying to pay my way through school. I landed a really cool job putting in high school football scores at the UPI, United Press International in Wisconsin. I was there like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. It was the end of early October, and President Reagan was coming through for his final campaign tour. This is 1984 election season. And the woman that was going to cover the event, it was a freak snowstorm or ice storm, and she was coming from Madison, Wisconsin, couldn't get to Milwaukee. So I'm in there banging away on 150 football scores, and the editor goes to me, "Son, do you have your social security number and a tie?" And I said, "I do. It's in my briefcase." I said, "Give it to me." I'm like, "Why?" He said, "You're going to cover President Reagan tonight." So I'm, what? I don't know anything about this. He said, "Don't worry. I'll talk you through it." And I threw on a jacket and a tie, and I went over to a German restaurant called Mater's where President Reagan was coming through, and I was trembling. I had no idea what I was doing. And the guy said, "Listen, just listen to him, take some notes, and then call me and tell me what happened. I'll write the story for him." So I dictated something, but it was awful. That man made it sound amazing. He put it out in the wire. I went back to school Monday, hit my Monday night normal shift at UPI, and the guy came in and said, "There's a call from the vice president in Chicago for UPI. He wants to talk to you." And I'm like, "Okay, great." And he said, "Hey, did you do that story Friday night?" And I'm thinking, should I answer that story or not? I'm not sure I want to answer the question. I don't know how bad it was. He said, "Well, we're really proud of what you did. You stepped into the void, and so we'd like to give you a full-time job." And so UPI hired me full-time, and I was 17 years old. I hadn't even turned 18 yet.
So you had just entered. You had just entered. This is your first year in college.
I was 5-6 weeks into my freshman year when all this happened. I mean, I talk about just being blessed. And so I covered sports for UPI, and then I went to the AP. I worked for the Associated Press Wire Service for 22 years. I was a news editor in Wisconsin and Washington, eventually became the number two person in the Washington Bureau, the deputy chief of Bureau, and I kind of oversaw investigative reporting. Went to the Washington Post as the chief national investigative correspondent for the Washington Post, and then went to the Washington Times as their executive editor. Spent many years there managing that great newspaper, and then ended up at The Hill. after a brief stint at Sinclair. And then this year, I decided to jump out on my own two feet and try to start my own news organization.
Yeah. So it's called Just the News. One of the things that I tell people a lot, and if you listen to this podcast, you know this, that I tell people never Google, try not even to use DuckDuckGo. What you have to really do is you have to follow people that you trust. And, you know, now I'm trying to keep everybody even off of Twitter because it's such a sewer farm there. And a lot of people are moving to Parler, including you're on Parler. But you also have justthenews.com. And, you know, what I'm trying to coach people is, you know, don't talk to the mainstream media. You know, even the president, you know, even President Trump, I mean, they shouldn't be talking to the mainstream media anymore, because it's like walking into the Democratic National Committee and being waterboarded by all of their top lawyers. I mean, they're looking to just assassinate you.
Yeah.
And one of the things about, you know, and I guess, you know, you would be called conservative media, but it's kind of funny, John. I don't think you and I have ever even had a conversation about conservatism or Republicans or what have you. You know, we've always just been, all of our conversations have always been about, you know, you have leads and you're doing investigative work to try to get to the bottom of things. And that's one of the real challenges we have, is that you have this, the atmosphere is filled up with extreme liberals working for extreme publications. And it's kind of funny, the very few publications that are out there or sites, news sites like yours, justthenews.com, you know, you're immediately targeted with racist, alt-right, you know, so, you know, they're always trying to disparage you, John, and you've been attacked a lot for this. But, you know, the funniest thing about this is whether, and we had Chuck Ross on a few months ago, I don't think, even Chuck Ross I've ever had a political conversation about. So, I mean, really, you know, conservative in my mind of the 10% that might even be conservative in of all the sites that are out there. Even with that said, that's just conservative in the sense of it's like old school journalism, right? It's like probably what you did back in the mid 80s is what you're doing today. You know, I'm never asking you to do, hey, make sure you do a nice political piece for me, John. I've never said that to you. And so,
no, ever.
You know, so conservative doesn't mean conservative Republican. I think it just means old traditional journalistic values, and there's very few of those sites. So congratulations on your site.
Thank you.
Now walk us through what it's like. I remember when you came to me and you said, "Oh, I'm going to start this," and I was like, "Wow, John, that's pretty ambitious." But you're growing every day. I know you're up.
We are.
You have over a dozen reporters now. So kind of walk the person who hasn't logged on to Just the News. Walk us through how you've started and how you're putting this together and how you come about writing the news on a 24/7 basis.
Thank you for asking that question. Yeah, we started in late February. It took us a couple months to get everything up and running, the website and get the building and the real estate. So we're about 5 months old. This month we'll do about 15 million readers. So we've grown fast. We probably do about 6 million video viewers as well. And our goal is to, what I call, to commit back to the future journalism. We're going to go back to the way journalism was when reporters left their opinions at the threshold of the office and didn't express them, didn't try to pick winners and losers in news, gave people facts, remained neutral, and let people make up their own mind. That's not the routine for most of the industry today, but that's what we're still trying to practice. So neutrality, fair comment, balance, just the facts. And one of the most important tools we created for our reporters and for our readers is a thing called Dig In. When we write a story, we don't want to be arrogant like the New York Times, that you have to trust us. We're the New York Times. We put everything that our reporter has in their notebook in a new tab called Dig In. You can see the documents, the audio, the video, the links in the research, the footnotes, so that readers can go and click on that tab and say, yeah, these guys telling me the truth. Let me make up my own mind. We set out to create a news organization that would give you information, not indoctrination, and that we trust the readers to make up their own minds. So we'll write our story, and then we'll give you our raw materials. And that's become extraordinarily popular. We see people clicking all day on the Dig In tab, and they'll ask questions about documents that weren't even in the story or barely mentioned in the story. It gives me enormous confidence that the American people just want news. They don't want people to make up their mind for them. They want to look at the facts, and then they'll make up their own mind. And that's what we've tried to respect, and we've been rewarded so much. We're growing by leaps and bounds every day. We've got podcasts. Six podcasts right now and more to come.
Let's walk through those podcasts. I've been a guest. Sure. I think I was one of your first guests when
you were one of my first, yeah,
when you started the podcast and it was just you. Right. But now you've grown. I know you have Cheryl Atkinson has a podcast. Well, walk us through your six different podcasts you have on Just the News now.
Yeah, we're really proud. So I have two a week. David Brody, the great CBN correspondent who also writes for Just the News, has two a week. Cheryl Atkinson has one a week. And then the pollster who does our polling, Scott Rasmussen, takes one number a day in a podcast. That's one of my favorite podcasts. And he tries to explain its relevance to the American people. And it's not always a poll number. It can be a census number, a statistic, something that tells us more about the America that we are today. And these are catching fire. They're growing every day. We're going to be adding some new talents in the next couple of weeks. I hope to get to 10 or 12 podcasts a week. And so it's all news. Uh-huh. We just do news.
That's incredible. So I didn't know that. That's going to be, you're going to be the only, you're a one-stop shop. It'll just be Just the News podcast.
We hope.
So, if you subscribe to Just the News, do you get all of those podcasts then delivered to your device?
Absolutely. You can listen to them on the website. There's a home called Podcast You Cook, and that you can listen there. You can get them on Apple Podcasts. You can get them on Stitcher, Google Podcasts. We're on 13 different podcast platforms. Basically, any podcast delivery system in America we're on today. And you just search for mine. It's called John Solomon Reports. My favorite title of all of them is David Brody's. It's The Pod's Honest Truth, which I get a kick out of. And he's had the president, vice president on there. He's done a great job. We just do interviews. We ask people questions. We try to get to the truth. We often use our social media to find out what our readers are wanting to know before we interview someone. And then we try to ask those questions. So we try to be responsive to the public.
All right. So podcasts, and then what, and I know you're doing some video, right? So walk us through kind of the video you're doing now and then the video you might be doing in the future.
Well, we're going to have some news in a couple of weeks. So right now, what we try to do, if video goes with our story, if we're writing about the president at a news conference and the news conference here, we try to make that available. We stream about 12 live events a day. So news that's happening, we just will run on the site, on Facebook, on YouTube. We have a big YouTube channel that's growing. And then anything that goes with a story, if there's a 2-3 minute clip that explains why the president said, we're not going to cut it down and manipulate it and try to pretend, well, these 9 words are what really he meant. We give the longer extended clip to people so they can make up their own mind. So I'd say about 50% of our stories today have a video in them. But the most exciting thing we're working on, and we hope this will be public by Labor Day, is the advent of a digital television network. And we're working on that now. We're going to have some full shows. We're going to have some breaking news components and reporters coming in and out throughout the day. And I hope in August or early September to be able to announce that part of Just the News. It'd just be just another delivery vehicle. We also have a book division where we're beginning to write books about the news. Maybe our reporters broke a big story and there's something more in depth we want to talk about. We're going to publish 4 to 5 books a year as well under the Just the News label in partnership with Post Hill Press. So we're very, very excited about that as well.
Well, that's great, John. And justthenews.com, we're going to get into your new book, Fallout, on the Friday edition of the Devin News podcast. So
thank you.
Just, closing out here, you're also, kind of an average Joe, real guy. You started out in sports. So tell us about that. Like, what was your favorite sport? Like, what were you covering originally? What was that about?
Growing up in an Irish family, you played all the sports you could. So I played basketball, baseball, and football. My brother was an outstanding pitcher, appeared in a couple of college World Series Division III. And so baseball was all of our passion. We played basketball because it was required, though we probably weren't as good. I love sports. So when I realized in college I wasn't going to play competitively anymore, I wanted to write about sports. I did an article, Sports Illustrated, wrote for a lot of different places when I was growing up. And sports was my passion. And one day a guy came to me in the AP, it was maybe 3 years into my career, and said, sports is great, but you'll be a sports widow. You'll never be able to marry because you'll never see your wife because you'll be covering games days and night. You'll try news. It's a little more tolerable. And so I flipped over to the news division and then worked my way up. Right after I graduated from college, I became a news editor in Wisconsin. So I was in charge of the news report for the state of Wisconsin of AP. And I got the bug. And I did my first investigative report that year. We did a project showing how teachers who were convicted of molesting students would move to another district and get a job, and that district wouldn't know they had a conviction for a heinous crime in another district. And we found over 100 teachers that had fallen through the cracks and got back in front of children. Some who had had multiple sexual encounters, improper encounters with students. And there was a law passed for that. And I got the bug for investigative reporting. I thought, well, this Irish cop family and this reporter can maybe put the two things together. And I soon became an investigative reporter.
And if I remember right, so you grew up in Connecticut, right?
I did. Yep. Monroe, Connecticut.
So then you were working where, out of Milwaukee when you moved to Wisconsin?
Yep. And then I came to Washington just before the Clarence Thomas Harrington. I guess that was the perfect time to learn how Washington was going to become, because those were very vitriolic hearings.
So now you're an official swamp creature living in the swamp.
Almost 30 years.
You have 30 years in the swamp, and you have how many children?
I have one son, Josh, who's autistic, an adult, lives with us, a wonderful child, has made my life so much more rich than I can ever imagine. And my wife and I will next month celebrate our 32nd anniversary. Judy and I were high school sweethearts, and we've never lost it.
Well, that's great, John. And I think, you know, this is one of the things I try to get across on my podcast, is that, you know, all these people that we interview, they have real lives. And a lot of time, you know, we see you on Fox News, but we don't know, you know, much about you or your family. But you've done a hell of a job. You've done a great investigative work. And I remember when you told me about you were creating Just the News, I remember my comms team, and you walked out and I said, man, I don't know if this is a good idea. Like, John's going to leave the Hill. It's, you know, the Hill's been established for a long time. Look, it looks like it's doing very, very well. It's one of my go-to sites.
So good.
And I encourage everybody to go to justthenews.com, and we'll put it on the screen for those of you who watch it on watch the podcast on YouTube. So we're going to get into Fallout next. So make sure you tune in on Friday. Devin Nunes, catch you then.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all.
Trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.